Welcome to Everyone Loves Guitar, where we get to sit down and talk with interesting professional guitar players and related music industry experts. If you love playing guitar, stick around. You're in the right place. Hey, this is Craig Garber. I want to welcome you to part two of my interview with Frank Sidoris. Check it out. He's going to finish his story about how he acquired his guitar and the unique circumstances around it. Enjoy the show and thanks for listening.
If you want to talk about like serendipity and whatnot, like this is literally, it sounds like I'm making this whole thing up. So the story is just ridiculous. So we were in Ecuador. I remember we're playing a gig in Quito, Ecuador, and the elevation is twice as high as Denver.
So it's way up there.
And so I'm trying not to move around a lot because everyone's afraid that we're all going to faint. Like there's oxygen everywhere. So I'm standing there in one spot and I'm just kind of wandering off mentally thinking about, okay, well, I was playing a black 335, just a standard, you know, your average one. So I'm sitting there thinking like, if I ever made a custom shop, my own signature guitar, it'd probably be a 335. But I want it to be like fully hollow or something like interesting, like a 330, you know, make it fully hollow. And then, but not like a 330 neck, like be a full size 335 and then do like, you know, how custom shop like 355s have the triple binding and all that. It's very specific. So anyway, I can go off on the details, but I wanted a specific binding. I wanted a Bigsby. I wanted the small block inlays and I wanted all black. I wanted it to be either P90s or really nice humbucker, like PAFs or something. So fast forward about like 4 months, we go to Memphis and I get a tour of the Memphis guitar, you know, Gibson factory. And after the tour, it was cool because it wasn't just like the get in line with people tour, like, okay, here's wood and here's the whatever. It was like the guys that have been working there forever. The guy's name is Mike Voltz.
Oh, it was like a private tour.
Yeah, it was just me and the bass player, Todd. And he showed us everything and he took us in the back offices and they had all these killer guitars that were just, they just got off the line. Like they're, and I'd never seen them before. And we're just chatting it up, having a great conversation. And they, I take the guy, Mike, aside. I say, hey, who's your custom shop guy? Who do I have to talk to about making my own guitar? I don't care how much it costs. It was like one of those things where I thought I would just, I'll do whatever I can to get like, I just want this guitar to come to life at some point. And he goes, I explained the guitar to him. He's like, yeah, what'd you have in mind? So I'm telling him my ideas. And as I'm done talking, he goes, that's crazy because we literally just essentially made that guitar. Like it's 3 hours old. And he walks over and he grabs his black guitar. It looks like a 335, right? And he hands it to me and it smells like lacquer. It's 3 hours old. So again, brand new fucking guitar. And I'm looking at it and I don't even know how to believe what's going on because it's exactly what I just described. Fully hollow, has PAF pickups, got the Bigsby, it's got small block inlays, it's got this cool cream binding. It is literally the guitar I just talked about in my head, essentially. I came up with it and the dude's like, we just made this guitar. And so it's the first one off the line, it's the very first one. Number one and two were right next to each other. And I'm like, holy shit. So I play it and I'm like, thank you for your time. Thanks for hanging out with us, whatever. And we go to Graceland and go to Elvis's house, do that whole tour.
Did you think like that you wanted to buy it?
Well, part of me, I think I didn't want to say anything at the time. Like, oh, dude, I at some point I want to get one. I didn't give him any. Like, he knew that I couldn't believe I was holding his guitar. But I never really mentioned like, yeah, I'll buy it from you later. I just said, dude, what a crazy story. Like, I think I said I'll be in touch or something. You know, okay. I didn't really allude to like I'm gonna buy this guitar. So
and I'm sorry, when was this? 2000, just 2-3 years ago?
I can actually find out right now. It'll take give me 2 seconds. So as I'm leaving, I'm just telling Todd like I can't believe it. That's literally the guitar I wanted. That's the guitar. And so I go to Graceland. We all do the tour of Graceland. So we go to like Elvis's house and do the whole thing. I get a text from Slash's tech. Okay, so 2015, okay. April 30th, 2015. So I get a...
That's pretty damn specific, Frank.
I got the photo of when it's on my iPhone, man. You could type in any city and it'll pull it up, give you the date and everything. It's crazy. So anywho, I get a text from Slash's tech, who's really good friends with the guy at Memphis who does the custom shop stuff, that guy Mike Voltz. He goes, hey, dude, when are you going to be back at the hotel? And I was like, we're on our way back right now. He goes, cool, text me your room number. So I get to my room, I get a knock on the door, and it's Slash's tech leaning on a guitar case. And I'm like, did they give you a guitar? Because the backstory with him is he helped develop Rich Robinson's 335.
Oh, so wow.
He had this relationship with this guy. He's Rich Robinson's tech right now, by the way. So anyway,
is he not Slash's tech anymore? Or
not
both?
Right now.
Okay.
Slash's original tech's out with him now.
Okay.
But this guy's the best. He's the coolest. So I go, did they give you a Rich Robinson guitar? That's fucking amazing. And he's like, no, this is yours. And I'm thinking okay, this is just going to be like empty case or something. I was like, who would do this, right? But anyway, he brings it in. We open it up, and it's the very first 330L, and it's that guitar. Mike Volt told him, are you going to see Frank later? And he's like, yeah. He goes, just give this to him. And it wasn't even out yet, dude. This wow. guitar wasn't even released. It's a limited run. And he said, if anybody questions you at all, if anybody like says, hey, is this – like, how'd you get this guitar? Just be like, it's a loaner. Just say it's a loaner, and it's definitely not a loaner. It's like my guitar. It's like my...
Wow, that's a nice story, man. Really nice story.
It's the craziest thing, because the fact that it essentially materialized 3 hours before I got there, and the guy ends up just giving me this guitar. I'm like, what the fuck? Like, how? And it's crazy, because it's called the official title. If you look at, like, Gibson.com, or if you look it up, it's an Gibson ES-330L. So
how many of those did they make?
I don't even know, and it wasn't a lot, though. I mean, it was only for a little bit, and I'd like to look it up, because that specifics of it, it's a 59-330 neck, mm-hmm. and it's a 335 body, but it's fully hollow like a 330 as well. So it's all, you know, once you get into the ES guitars, there's all sorts of specifics, and it gets pretty out there, but it's a very special guitar, man. It's just crazy. Slash played it. Like, right when I got it, I was like, dude, check this out. And he sat there and played it, and he's like, wow, this is really cool. Like, that was one of the only guitars I could really tell. He was like, okay, this is a really special guitar.
That's
you know?
Great.
Yeah.
But let me add, how do you play a fully hollow body guitar? Like, isn't that like bouncing off the fucking walls with sound?
So what I tried to take notes from like Billy Duffy and people that play like fucking White Falcons and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy. So I never filled a guitar up in my life. Like, you know, people put foam and shirts and stuff in their guitars sometimes. Like
I had never,
people do that. Like, they'll fill it up and it'll help with the feedback. But I remember the first time I ever played it was at a festival. It might have been it wasn't Beale Street Music Festival in Memphis, but it was a festival we played. I remember I had that guitar, and I just told my tech, I was like, dude, just give it to me for like Paradise City. It's the last song we're doing. So if it starts taking off, like whatever, like it's our last song, and it'll be pretty rock and roll either way. Right. So I take this guitar, and if I am in the proximity of my amp at all, like, first of all, number one rule, you can't face your amp. If I am looking at that amp, it's just the moment I turn towards it, it's just immediate just screaming, yeah. too. So the cool thing, though, if your back was towards your back towards the amp, if you hit a chord and let it ring, you would get this power, almost like this extra. It sounded like I just hit a fuzz pedal. Because it would just resonate the chord. It'd just be like, you know, big A, and then it just all this power behind it. I was like, holy shit, it was so cool. But again, you had to really keep a distance from that amp, because this thing would just take off. So now we were rehearsing, and one of the dudes at the rehearsal space was like, hey, do you want to fill this? I have like high quality foam, and he's like, hey, you've done this before. I was like, I'll give it a shot. So he took that like really like firm foam, like you've seen it before.
How
I don't
do you
know
even how. Take? What do you take off?
So you don't take anything off. You literally
inject it like a freaking what is that called? Like,
I don't know.
In your walls, like
no, not like a yeah. I know what you mean. You know, no, like insulation.
Insulation. Like yeah, that's right. Sorry, I couldn't think of. Well, how do you get it in there?
You take. Here's how he did it, and it was incredible to watch. So he put the guitar down on like a little. I mean, his little work box, but and he took a flathead screwdriver, which seems super, you know, scary because you're like, you know, it's pretty to watch. But he takes this really firm, like, I mean, the pieces weren't huge by any means, but what he did was he, like, he put it on top, but like at an angle, and he just used his screwdriver to kind of push it in, and all the foam just pushed right up against the wall of that hole, and it just, it's crazy because now it does not feed back anywhere near as bad as it did. It was so bad before. Now this thing, it just kind of helps, like having something up against the top of the guitar, you know what I mean, from the bottom.
It
helps that, you know, vibration. So so it looks cool too, because people, you'd never know that that's right. what's inside, because it just looks black. It's all the same color, so it's pretty cool.
So in theory, if you wanted to take the foam out, you probably could. It would be a challenge, but yeah, okay.
Yeah, I just have to probably cut it in the middle and just start pulling pieces out, you know?
Yeah.
But it's cool because it looks great. And
Show me that bad boy if it's close. Yeah, I'd love to see that.
Talk amongst yourselves if you want.
Talk amongst yourselves, ladies and gentlemen. So you're playing that on a regular basis now.
Yeah.
So how does that work with cartage A and B?
Let's see. So this one, when it's a special guitar like this, I always throw a fit at airports. I really mean business when it comes down to this kind of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
So I will either ship this in the guitar boat, or I will, like, or with the freight, or I will carry this on myself and no one can yell at me because I'll lose my mind. Because it's like, you just tell the airports, like, look, I'll tell Gibson, like, I've done this before, like a quick aside. I remember I was flying WestJet to Edmonton, Canada. And so I had that 2002 Les Paul I told you about,
mm-hmm.
and the triple pickup, both of those in my hands, and I had to carry them. Those two other guitars I mentioned, I had to carry them, and I couldn't, like, I remember going up to it, and it was like a new person working behind the desk. They were like a brand new employee, and I'm like, look, I need to carry these on. They go, sir, you can't do that. It's policy. And I was like, no, but you don't understand. They're irreplaceable guitars, first of all. They are, but I was really talking it up. I was trying to be like, they're worth, you know, I was really lying to her, but I was just not going to let them break my guitar, because they had before. They, one time, Delta or someone dropped something on my 70 Les Paul in an SKB case, and it smashed the pickup ring.
Oh.
Long story short, so I tweeted WestJet, and I tweeted Gibson Guitar, and I said, WestJet's not allowing me to take my at Gibson Guitar, you know, whatever custom shops, and I was like, wish me luck, because I don't know what to do. And then Gibson retweets it to, you know, fucking a billion people, and WestJet, the people on their Twitter see it, and then as I get to the gate, after like not really throwing a fit, but they could tell I was upset, a woman comes up to me and she goes, hi, Frank Sidoris? Yes. She's like, I just want to let you know, we hand delivered your guitars onto the plane, just, you know, because I think someone on Twitter was like, hey, dude, this guy's fucking serious. So like, he really, you have to help them out. He does not want his guitars to get fucked up. So
that's really,
you
know, cool.
It worked out. Twitter for the win. But anyway.
That's great, man. That's a beautiful looking guitar, man. So So the black foam is inside there. Nice.
Yeah, can you tell right there? That's foam right there. That's all.
I don't see anything. So it has to be, because normally even if there was nothing in there, I would see the wood of the bottom, because the wood isn't painted.
It's just the black.
Yeah, the wood isn't painted black.
No one can tell, but
yeah.
Yeah, really cool guitar. So you got your Bigsby, and these are PAF, like 59, and small block inlays. You got the cool cream binding. Oh, and here's another fun little fact about this guitar.
I love the cream binding, man.
Yeah, I do too.
That really looks
good. Love this. If you look at the truss rod cover, it's an F-bolt.
Oh, yeah, very cool.
Super, like, cool little stylistic thing. But then one of my favorite features of this guitar that makes it even more exciting is that Slash at the time, I remember we were at Rock on the Range in Columbus, and he had just had a Les Paul custom made. So, like, you know, the black one with the diamond and everything. So they had put, for whatever reason, on his pickup selector, a white tip. You know what I mean? Like, on your pickup selector, like, for whatever reason, like right here. This guy here, like, it had a white tip instead of a cream one, so it didn't match. So yours is white, right?
Yeah, hang on. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's white.
So that one, it matches your guitar, though. It looks fine. Like, it doesn't look wrong. Like, right. It looks proper, right? So Slash is, he had a Les Paul custom made, and it had a rosewood neck and it was special, but for whatever reason they put a white tip on it and the cream did not match. Didn't make any sense. So on this guitar, I'm playing it, warming up. Oh,
you know what? That looks great.
I'm warming up, and this one was white too. It didn't match my binding. So Slash goes, "Hey, do you want to trade?" So this is Slash's tip, and he has mine.
Ah, that's so funny. So let me see. Now you got a bug in my head, man. I don't know. Yeah, that cream one looks good. Now I'm going to be like analyzing the tip.
Yeah,
of
I can't tell the binding color on here, but if it's cream, I mean that's the way to go.
It is. It's cream, but I don't think it's as creamy as yours.
Oh, but yours looks great. I love that. That white, that's cool, man. That looks great.
Well, you know what? If Frank Sidora says my guitar looks great, I'm not doing a damn thing with it.
Keep it the same. But yeah, that guitar is very special, man. I mean, it's totally recording worthy. I mean, it's just everything about that guitar. It's just beatly. It sounds like, I mean, if you crank it up, it's just powerful, and it cleans up. Everything about that guitar is very special.
Now that it doesn't feed back, you could really make it, you know, work the shit out of it.
And if I want it to feed back, I have the option. That's the cool thing. If I go up to my amp, even though it's filled up, and it'll just fucking, it's like a deep feedback, though. It's really sick. You
love
it.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah, that's absolutely. Really
good. Great stories, man. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you. I thank them big time because, I mean, they did not have to do that. He did not have to give me that guitar. Like, no. What the fuck? He was just – it was our first time meeting, by the way. He was just so
– Yeah, but like –
I think we just really got along, man. It was cool.
Frank, you're just that guy. Like I said, you're easy to root for. There are certain people that you just want to do shit for because they just deserve it sort of, you know? That's just the way it is. I mean, I don't know how to explain. And I'm not by any means kissing your ass because I have no reason. I mean, I would say nothing.
No, I feel you. I appreciate that, though.
You know, you're just one of those guys. You're easy to root for. You want to help you because you're just like a, you know, you're not a dick. You're a really pleasant guy. You know, yeah. Frank Sidoras, not a dick.
Yeah. On my car picks, I'm just going to, not a dick.
Yeah.
Totally do that.
That could be the I forgot it. I'm losing my mind here.
Oh, you're good. You're good.
Royal Electric's first album.
Exactly. We're not dicks. Okay.
Yeah, we're not dicks. Who are your biggest influences guitar wise playing?
Man, it's a great question because I really am all over the board. Like So early on, easily the original Alice Cooper band. Those guys were, I mean, you could listen to those albums from like Welcome to My Nightmare and like Alice's solo, you know, once he went solo and all that. And those dudes are the shit, like Dick Wagner and Steve Hunter and all that. But Glenn Buxton and Michael Bruce, the original guys, they were, what's so cool is that they were very Beatly themselves. They were trying to be the Beatles. And it's like they went to school off of the Beatles and look what happened. Like they ended up writing some of those badass rock and roll music ever. Like that. The school's out, like No More Mr. Nice Guy. Like, listen to the verses in No More Mr. Nice Guy. It's like just beautiful chords. Like, just the way they, like, songwriting wise, they're just amazing. Well, so then,
just the bend, you know, people on No More Mr. Nice Guy.
Totally.
You know, that is just like that.
Yeah.
You really hear that. It's so, like, appropriate and so simple. And it's just awesome.
So then, I actually played classical guitar for years. Like, I competed in high school. That was, I know it's so random, but.
No, but that's probably why you got that gig with Slash, because your finger dexterity was probably nuts from that.
I took that so seriously, dude. It was ridiculous. But I'm a big like David Bowie fan. I've always loved, you know, it's like any of that kind of just, you know, T-Rex. Like I really got down with Jimi Hendrix too. But I think Alex Lifeson was definitely a big one for me, for sure. I mean, because it was random, and he's the reason I actually played classical guitar, if you could believe it. Like The Trees, that song The Trees has that classical intro. And
on the acoustic.
Yeah, it's a cool little classical intro. And so I remember I had a teacher who was trying to teach me classical guitar, and I, after that blues guy, and I was like, I'm just trying to play rock music, dude, I'm sorry. Like, but I didn't say it like so bluntly, but I was trying to be nice, like, dude, I don't know if I want to do the classical thing. And he's just like, well, it's something that you could really, I mean, even if you don't become a classical guitar player, you will have, I mean, it's just good for you. And I swear by this to this day, it's important to get down like that. But I was listening to Rush and then I heard The Trees and I go, okay, let's meet in the middle here. Show me this rock band's classical song.
Ah, yeah. Clever, man.
So that was that. But
you learned good negotiating skills.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But over time, it's like, I mean, Slash was definitely one of those dudes that I looked up to. I mean, I will say that one of the most important ever for me, and this is in no particular order, really. I'm just kind of throwing out some names. But I swear to you, dude, like, clearly the Beatles as a whole, I looked up to everything that they did, but Jimmy Page, I know Led Zeppelin when people just say, hey, man, rock and roll Led Zeppelin, right? But it's like Jimmy and his everything he did just for me.
Brilliant guy.
Worshipped early on. That was every, like, I mean, not every, because, I mean, there's people, when I say I listen to everything live, like, then with Zeppelin, there's always a danger in saying you know everything about Zeppelin or like the UK, because there's always the bootleg guys like, do you know from fucking 74 when the sorry, I don't have that, but like
the third night at the Garden when Bonzo was sick the first three songs, it's like
exactly
you retained, like why do you know that information?
So funny, dude. That's hilarious. That's the perfect way to say it, because you know Bonzo was sick and Jonesy was sick and anyway, so I really look up to Jimmy. I still do. He's one of those dudes that I'm waiting to run into him and meet him and just not fanboy, but just kind of just shake his hand. And
yeah,
I think
sure.
that is one of those, I mean, every single Zeppelin album. I mean, Coda, I know always gets the bad rap, but I loved Presence. Presence really stuck out to me early on. It's hilarious. But Physical Graffiti, clearly.
Physical Graffiti, that's get a lot of bang for your buck on that one, man.
Oh, 100%, dude. Like, as far as, like, I think, and Stevie Ray Vaughan was a big deal early on for me. Like, I remember attempting to tackle the song Rude Mood, if you know that one.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, it's just on fire, because you go, okay, as a young guy trying to play it, you're just playing the notes, but you realize you're not playing that every single time he's going oh, do every single time he's doing like a mute. It's like a you know, it's the funkiest shit ever if you think about it. His right hand, I will attribute me kind of going down that, like, more like falling in love with playing rhythmic stuff. I feel like it's natural too for people mostly, like, loving rhythmic stuff and wanting to play the drums and shit, but like the fact that, like, he was so loose, and then even Jimmy Page was like sloppy loose in the coolest way. Like songs like the Wanton song on Physical Graffiti, it's like that was my shit. Like anything, they love James Brown too. They were super groovy. It's like that was a lot of the bands I love had some kind of funky something to them in the background for the most part. But
I hate when people, like, you know, you listen and you read and you hear things, oh, Jimmy Page was so sloppy. I'm like, you know what? Fuck.
And
you.
I say sloppy in a nice way.
No, like, you were like complimentary. You weren't saying.
I know. Going,
I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? And like,
sloppy,
you know,
like, fuck off, dude. He's the shit. Like, that's not a bad sloppy. That's a style. That is the most loose coolness ever. And it's like, and dude, I love Eddie Van Halen. I fucking love the dudes that can get down like that, but. I mean, Eddie was still groovy as fuck too. Think about it. It's like he trying to play some of those riffs. It's like no one has the swing that guy had.
Yeah, he played with a
lot
of swing.
Like, you play as fast as you can, but Eddie Van Halen has more swing than you. Sorry. It's like, sorry about that. You know, that's just what it is. And, you know, even, and this is kind of funny because a lot of people I don't think people expect it, but like Paul Gilbert was one of those dudes, me. Because, like, look, I am the last guy, especially now in my life, I feel like I don't want to sit down and just go, hey, look at this insane lick I could play. Like, I don't – early on when you're learning, it was cool. And there's nothing wrong with that. I still love – like, my favorite thing now is if I'm going to play an insane lick, it'd probably be a really, like, chicken-picking kind of cool – I love that. That's always sick. But anyway, Paul Gilbert is one of those guys that I kind of was turned on to him from one of my best friends, and I slowly listened to him more and more. And you realize if you look at anything from Paul now – my favorite thing that I heard him say, because he's a huge Beatles guy, all he wants to do is just play cool shit and, like, just, you know, beautiful things. And it's like he had an interview, or I forget where he said it, but he goes, if I could go back, I would have done everything completely differently, because I think I've done a lot more damage than good. And I was just like, what does he mean by that? So he's saying, it was almost like he was promoting just playing as fast as you can with no feeling. Even though when he played fast, he played with feeling, and he had soul. Like, I am not, and no offense to anybody, I'm not like an Yngwie guy. I'm not. I really don't get down with that. But Paul was the only dude who played like. I was attracted to his kind of shredding, I guess. If you want to, you know, it's like he played with soul, and it was just like what he was doing was almost is totally crazier than anybody else. I think the only other person that blew my mind in that realm was that guy Guthrie Govan.
Yeah, from England.
That dude's out of his mind. Yeah. No one plays like him. Like he literally is not real, I don't think. I don't think it's possible almost what he does. It's crazy.
You know who I've listened to? Because I actually have her coming on the show, so I was going back. Jennifer Batten.
No
was,
way.
Was a pretty badass. Yeah, she's coming on like Monday. Break, yeah, dude. She's coming on Monday.
Oh, by the way, I want you to know I am a huge Michael Jackson fan. I am... Like, I mean, when it comes down, we're talking rock and roll all the time, but it's like, again, I really do love, like, Michael and the music in the background. Like, listen to, like, Wanna Be Starting Something by Michael and that crazy-ass chromatic-y guitar solo-ish. I don't know how you – just that little part. It's like that stuff is so much harder than a lot of the stuff that people are trying to learn nowadays. You got to have a loose right hand, and you have to be loose in general, I guess. It's like all those little things that people kind of overlook, maybe because it's pop music, I don't understand, but, like – That is the coolest shit in the world when you can play like that. And Jennifer played with Michael. She used your Dangerous tour. I know all about her.
But she was very, very soulful in a lot of her. You know, she was obviously. I mean, I listened to something the other day, and it was like 16th notes at 132 beats a minute because I took out my metronome and I'm like, fuck, I gotta clock this. And it was like but it was sounded great. It really did. So, you know, I would put her up there in that category. But yeah, I know what
she's
you mean.
She's really a badass, dude. Like I love that Michael featured just not just killer guitar players, but the fact that they were also women on top of it. Just made it's like he loved that. He's like, I'm gonna showcase how badass you are. And I love that it's not like, oh, she's good for a girl. Like I hate that that kind of shit, like, because it's just so stupid to say, but like she's a bad motherfucker. Like, what are you going to say? Like, she's better than you.
No, she's a great guitar player, man.
That's cool, man. But yeah, anyway, I definitely now in my life, as far as who I'm looking up to, it's like I really do look to all of the most kind of – it's all about just – I mean, I know feel clearly, but it's just like anybody that has that rhythmic – like you listen to the one album that Herbie Hancock did that had a guitar player on it. It's called Secrets.
I don't know that album. I know Herbie Hancock.
Yeah, don't worry about it. But like the meters and shit like that, you listen to those kind of like that kind of guitar playing. It's all just so groovy and cool. It's just it's totally my jam now. Like learning Earth, Wind, and Fire stuff and just getting down. Like I really love that kind of realm right now. It's just where I'm at, and I just, you know, it's not easy. It's not easy to feel good. It's like, you know, like I feel like a lot of that is natural, of course, and I think I can play that well, but like I am in that school lately. That's just kind of where I've been. And it's cool because, you know, writing with Slash on the next album, I like to channel into that, because if you listen to Slash, you realize all of his riffs are super groovy. Like listen to like even one example, like Paradise City. Listen to, because he wrote the rhythm playing, learning a lot of the Guns N' Roses stuff on that like next in-depth level that I had to, because – you know, I'm not going to just take liberties and play Guns N' Roses songs, you know, not how they were recorded. Because there's one thing I really hate about going to see people play, you know, certain songs that are like standards. Like, dude, at this point, if you're not going to do the specific one thing that John Bonham does in The Ocean or something when you're playing it live, you know, people are going to be like, hey, what the fuck, man? You totally missed that really important part that I've known my whole life. So when it comes down to like playing Guns N' Roses stuff, Izzy... he was a really loose, kind of like Jimmy Pagey, sloppy kind of player as well. You know, Duff told me this too. He was like, man, if you think, because I remember telling him, I was playing, if you listen to Paradise City, the verses, listen to Izzy's little part, which Slash wrote, which to my point was that Slash is a super funky guy too. But I remember showing Duff, I was like, I love that this guy can play, like how groovy this is. And I played it, and he goes, oh, it's not that tight. He goes, he wasn't saying I was playing. He goes, you're not playing it wrong. He goes, or bad. He goes, Izzy just, he did not play that tight. And I was like, damn. So every time I'd play, I was kind of like, you really got to really loosen up and just kind of, it's a super simple little part. But like, that could be said about any of the Izzy stuff. Just play it like Ron Wood, just kind of just cool.
That's,
you know,
funny that you mentioned it, because he is a very, even just his physical presence, you can't find a guy more, if he was any more laid back, he'd be an ironing board or on the floor. Yeah. You know, he's just like so chilled out, that dude.
100%. Yeah.
But you know, culture. That's good for you, because if that's probably like, you had to look at that as a learning opportunity, because now that you got another fucking arrow in your quiver that you could do that.
Oh yeah. No, and it's something I kind of went to naturally. I feel like it's always something I like to play. I love groovy stuff. So it's cool to like go get into the Slash world and get to play these songs, and they already have those parts. Those are already, because of Slash, because he has that soul in him. When he plays these certain songs, you're like, man, it's just, his riffs are so hard and heavy, but like just fucking groovy. And that's why they're cool. It's just,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
It's funny because, everybody knows Lynyrd Skynyrd songs, but I interviewed two of the guys. Artemus Pyle was the original drummer, and he's on tour now. So I interviewed two of the guys in the Artemus Pyle band, and one of them is a guy named Dave Fowler. He's the bass player. And he said to me, he goes, one of the toughest things, surprisingly, was to learn the bass riffs. And I said, really? He goes, yeah. He goes, because, everybody knows how to play Freebird, and everybody knows how to play, What's Your Name and all the Skynyrd songs. He goes, but
yeah, right.
Go online. I don't remember what song it was, but there's a bass riff, and it's just stripped down, just the bass riff. And you'll see how hard it is. And so now you're telling me basically the same thing, except with a guitar riff where, it's, more layered, which is going to be harder. So I totally understand what you're saying. And you want to nail down those riffs as they were laid down on the tracks. And it's important to you.
I mean, there's room in certain things. Like, I understand there's certain songs that have room for your own thing, I guess. But there's so many people when they play, I'm really a stickler about drums specifically. Like, cause I play the drums on the side. It's one of my favorite things in the world. I've been playing for kind of like years now, which is weird, but like, I'm not a monster drummer, but it's my favorite thing. So I really pay attention to it a lot. But then when people with drums or guitar or little things, it's like, man, you can't miss the integral parts of famous songs. Like, especially songs that people are really emotionally attached to. So just imagine all the Guns fans. Like, if I just took liberties and I just, it'd just be stupid.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you're also, in general, you're that guy that you have, the bar is here, which I'm the same way. It's the right way to be, You don't want to like lower, you want to hit the fucking target.
100%.
And so I totally get it, and it's important, and you got to nail it down, not 98%, but at least 99.5%, closely, may hope, preferably 100%. I totally understand that, man. Do you still have that? I meant to ask you, do you still have your first guitar? The was it the Squire?
Dude, it's a sad story, because I remember it was my first guitar, and it came with an amp and, Squire Strat. And so I'll never forget it was in 10th or 11th grade. A girl that disappeared off the face of the earth at this point, but she's like, I want to learn guitar. And I was like, well, I have a guitar you could borrow, because I already had a different guitar at that point. I already had my next guitar was a Fender Cyclone. It was really cool.
What is that? A Cyclone? Is that like a?
It's a Cyclone's like a Jag and a Mustang put together.
Oh, cool.
So if you mix those two together, you get a Cyclone.
Interesting.
It has a 3-way pickup selector, and it was a Daphne blue color. It was really crazy.
I love that color, man.
Oh, it was super cool. Yeah.
It's weird how Fender
have it somewhere.
Some of their cooler colors they only put out on the lower, the Mexican Strats, and it's really weird. Like Fiesta Red.
Fiesta Red. And they have Candy Apple. But anyway, so I have that guitar. So I go, you can borrow my guitar. That's fine. She's like, okay. She borrows it, and her boyfriend at the time, and this is 10th grade style, so I don't know how old this dude was, but he fucking takes the guitar and the amp and borrows it from her. She doesn't tell me this, and then moves away. And I go, you got to be kidding me. That's my first guitar. She's like, I know. I don't know what to, I can't get a hold of him. And I'm like, man, are you fucking kidding me? Of all things, my first guitar. But whatever. It's okay. I have photos of it and me playing it. So whatever, I guess that's okay.
We're going to start a Facebook group. Get Frank Sidoris's guitar.
Dude, I know. I can't imagine.
Let's put the picture up. Do you have this guitar and a picture of you as a kid holding the guitar?
I would love to find it because, like, you know, it was just a little Fender amp and everything about it. It's like, I still can't believe that happened. That's just,
well, plus your dad got it for you, which has kind of got to have some nostalgia, you know, in and of itself.
It's yeah. Like, man, do you really like need to do that? Like, that's crazy. It's like, it's not my guitar, man. You shouldn't steal it. Yeah, whatever. Peace out or whatever. I have no idea how that played out, but it's.
Well, anybody listen to this, if you have Frank Sidoris's guitar,
yeah,
please, you know,
Black Fender Stratic, Squire Stratic, yeah,
it's a Black Fender Squire Strat,
Squire Strat, sorry,
and you got it from your 10th grade girlfriend. Please return it to its rightful owner, and we will not press charges. We would just grateful though, and you could just hit Frank up or hit me up, and we'd love to get that back. And who the hell knows? Maybe there'll be some Slash and Frank Sidoris guitar picks in it for you or something.
Yeah, I mean, I'll see what I can do. We'll see what I can do.
You have like a wide range of musical taste. What's your top three albums? Not in any particular order. What would be your knee jerk reaction to that?
Jesus.
I know, not in any particular order. Believe me.
Jesus. Okay. So I'll say. On the top of my head, I'll go. Well, I'm just gonna throw out.
Knee jerk.
Physical Graffiti. We'll say Physical Graffiti. We'll say. It's so funny because the older you get, it's the hardest. It gets harder. This question never gets easier.
Catalog gets bigger. Yeah.
Oh, totally. So I'll go. I'm gonna have to say a Beatles one. Definitely a Beatles. I'll say. I love that I picked two of the hardest bands to pick your favorite album by the way.
Abbey Road, White Album.
The White Album blew my mind as a kid, so I'll go with White Album.
Cool.
Even though I think I should say Abbey Road.
Side two of Abbey Road is almost like perfect.
I play that all the time. I've learned.
Oh, you mean you play it on guitar?
I want to play the entire. Yeah, I could do the whole thing from. I think it's After Because. Is that what it is? After Because on.
It's just a beautiful. I mean.
Yeah. Especially the end.
Yeah.
The end. Just the shit. Especially when you get there. But I love. I mean, everything about it, dude. Paul's the greatest. But in the third album, Jesus. I'll go. Oh man, this is so crazy. It's gonna be on record. I guess I'll say. Killer by Alice Cooper.
Oh, cool. Good album.
Sure.
You know what's really
cool? Let's say that for now, and then tomorrow I'll give you another top three.
we'll have an update tomorrow. We'll have the Sidoris update. Maybe we could put a link on the Everyone Loves Guitar website with Frank Sidoris. It's like Spotify top three.
Dude, my Spotify is so all over the board. It's ridiculous. Like I turned it off so people don't know what I'm listening to. You could share, but I would never do that because people would be like, what the fuck? Like, it's just people. I feel like it's so all over the board that people wouldn't understand. Like, you're a rock and roll guitar player. It's like, yeah, but you need to be well rounded. It's like, that's important. Come on.
Well, what do they think?
Listen to everything.
Listen to like one thing.
I know you got to listen to every single thing ever. So there's no doubt about it.
You know, it's cool. Physical Graffiti, the album cover, the house was shot in New York.
I've been there. It's on St. Mark's. It's
right.
90th and second. What is it?
No, it's St. Mark's is 8th Street. So it's like on like 2nd or 3rd Avenue or something like
then
that.
Then 2nd. Why did I think 90? It's 2nd.
It's really
cool. So I've been there many times. Every time I go, anytime we're in St. Mark's, I always take a photo in front of it.
Yeah, it's very cool.
And they have a place on underneath that it's a tea place called Physical Graffiti.
Oh, do they? That's pretty funny. Great. It's pretty cheesy.
Yeah. Yeah, super cheesy, but and the people in there have no idea what the album is, I imagine. Remember the woman working there was looking at me like I was crazy. It was like, Physical Graffiti, right? Like Led Zeppelin? No?
She's like,
yeah.
Cricket.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to. Yeah.
Do you want some tea?
yeah, do you want some tea or what? Just fucking come on.
Oh, man. Hey, what's something you've learned about yourself along this journey that you've been on for the last 6 to 8 years?
Well, it's kind of crazy. Like, it kind of comes back to, I mean, really being thrown into all of that. I mean, I didn't even mention this, but I wasn't able to. I mean, coming from the cab, I remember I tried to quit the band a little earlier so I can learn all the repertoire I needed for Slash.
I was wondering that. I was kind of thinking that. Go ahead, tell me.
Super hectic, and I wasn't gonna tell Slash like, dude, I can't do it. It was none of that. I was, just never let him see you sweat kind of thing. I was like, I wanted this so bad, and I wasn't going to let anybody understand, like, or I mean, even think that I was going to give an excuse, like, as to, oh shit, I need more time. I remember I was in Australia, and then I went back to the States, or I forget how it went, but our last show, I kind of remember the manager was a little pissed. I think he was a little upset with me in the cab, I think, because I was like, I have to leave earlier, dude. I don't even know if I could do this Australia run or all this stuff. He goes, well, we need you to commit because this and that. And I'm like, oh, I get it. That's fine. So I did it. And the Slash songs kind of took the back burner because I was like, at the same time, like, oh, fuck, okay, I can't let this happen. So in the end, it's like I proved to myself that, like, in high-pressure situations, I'm able to stick it out. But, like, it's just – I don't know, man. I've learned to always just give myself that room to just never, I don't know. I work well under pressure, but just try not to get yourself in those positions.
No, nobody wants to be. Yeah. Yeah.
No, hell no. It was crazy. But, I think, it also plays into, like I said, never let them see you sweat. I've learned a lot about kind of that. If you really want to do something and you have that drive, I mean, you're going to pull it off. It's not like, not everyone is, how can I word this? I'm rambling here. Like playing with Slash early on, I'm like, well, okay. There was a point where I go, can I actually do this? Am I the guy to do this? You know, early, this is years ago. So,
sure.
And it's like, you know, am I good enough? And then, you know, fake it till you make it kind of thing. That's like everyone says, you know, I did my absolute best and I was just kind of playing. And I'm like, there was moments in the middle of it. Like, wow, I actually, you know, I'm totally comfortable. I could do this. What the fuck am I getting in my head about? So I guess it all kind of comes back to getting in your head about everything. But I've learned that just relax about all those just ridiculous things that get in your head. But I don't know. That's something I've learned about myself to just again chill the fuck out. It's just I'm pretty. I'm not a nervous guy, but I've always been kind of all over the board sometimes mentally. But you know, as much as I'm straight faced here.
You're like a type A. I totally get it.
Sure. Yeah.
And you know, as you get older, that at least at me anyway, that I realize anyway that I don't want stress. So the things I would get hyped up about, and it's funny because my wife will often say, she goes, "Man, you're so much more chilled out." And a lot of that was on some of, I don't know that it was age per se, but it was kind of deliberate because I felt like things were passing me by, that I wasn't being present enough. And so I wanted to, like, and it's weird because once you hit 50, you sort of, time becomes a more valuable commodity to you.
Absolutely, dude. I can only imagine.
Yeah. I'm
almost 30, and that's like, I feel like the past years. The years have, just sitting here talking, even about like my girlfriend, we've been together for almost 5 years. And I go, how has 5 years gone by in the time that feels like your 10th grade year going to school, like, fuck man, summer's never going to come like that amount. You know what I mean? It's just crazy to think how fast things are going by now. Back, you know, early on things went by so slow. It's just, time is definitely a precious commodity. I'm totally with you on that.
Yeah, it seems like the more you have going on, the less, you know, the quicker the time goes, you know.
That's all it is. You're just distracted from the time. Yeah. When you're a kid, you have all the time in the world to think about how the clock.
How are you going to spend your time?
Yeah, exactly.
And then when you're older, you're like, fuck, I have no time because I got so much shit to do.
Totally, dude. Yeah. Like, I'll sit there and go, I mean, I can't tell you how many times where I have a show to play or a set list to learn. And I'm like, oh, I got time, because I'm the king of procrastination at times. Like, it's like, okay, well, I have plenty of time. I'm good. I'm fine. Whatever. I'll learn the songs. And then it's just, oh, fuck, the show's in 3 days. Jesus Christ. You know, then I'm cramming. It's hilarious.
Yeah, but you also have an internal meter because the bottom line is you're not going to not do it. So you have the internal meter and you just let the clock tick till you know, okay, meter's up. I got to do this now.
Right.
You know? And I totally get that because I run like that, to be honest with you. I think anybody that's busy – has to, because you got a lot of shit going on. So you're like, you know, do you practice this, you know, 3 weeks early? Is it really, you know, it could be a detriment because you're gonna have to get up to speed on it again. So get that. But yeah, for me, I wanted to be more present, you know. And it's funny because I've been with my wife 25 years and we had the same conversation last night. Can you imagine? It's 25 years, man. We were kids when we met, you know, and it's like,
that's crazy.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah, that's really amazing. That's very impressive.
Yeah, it's impressive to us. We don't know how we did it either.
That's so great.
Yeah, we don't know how we did it either. But yeah, we were just talking about that last night. It was kind of funny. Tell me something about yourself people would either be surprised to hear or would find a little odd.
Well, it's funny because it always comes – I mean, musically, I feel like a lot of people it always falls back on the whole like that I am a super funk nerd. I get down with that. But that I – you know, I don't know. I guess what's another one? I mean, I'd already mentioned that I skateboarded for 10 years. That's like literally all I did. That was my entire life.
Did you compete?
I did in Vegas. Like I did competitions and whatnot, like, you know, all sorts of shit like that, like constantly. I worked in a skate shop. I did all that sort of stuff.
That was your life.
It really, really was. And it's funny because like skate videos introduced me to a ton of good music. And if you don't know that, that's the fact. I mean, every skate video has there's always some good shit in there, like plenty of Bowie and cool stuff. But yeah, that was always a thing. I mean, that people don't really expect, like, wow. And I played baseball forever. That was something I did early on in life.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So I know.
My favorite thing about that is that now that I have long hair and I have jeans that fit, and I throw a baseball. And I throw a baseball. Some people are like, "Oh, wow!" It's like, or like the fact that I was able to do any sort of sports at all. I mean, my dad was the real deal as a player, and he still has a fucking cannon arm. But like the fact that. I mean, this is a funny story. We were at like a Father's Day thing in Vegas years ago. And I remember it was a Cashman Field. They allowed all the fathers and sons to go play catch on the field. Okay. It was really cool. So I'm playing catch with my dad. I look like this. And I remember, if you could believe this, it sounds like a joke, but the other team was like making fun of me for whatever fucking reason. Like,
because you had long hair.
He was like, yeah, and I didn't realize it, but my dad's like, you know, kind of pointed it out. He's like, yeah, the opposing team here that's about to play an actual game is kind of talking shit about you. So he was essentially like, go long, like just go as far away as you can. And we were just throwing this ball across the field, and they were just kind of like, it's almost like okay, all right, sorry, I talked about your gene. Like that even fucking matters. Such a stupid thing, but it was like. It's just a silly story.
You got retribution, man.
I'm all about it, you know.
That's good, man.
If anybody's curious, I could throw a baseball, you guitar players.
and in fact, Frank does have the most hair of any human who's ever been on this show, and I do believe it will be a while till someone takes that title, Frank. To be quite honest with you. And I will, yeah, and honor. We will have the ticker tape running on the website. But I have your next album title after Not a Dick. It's Skateboarding Is My Life.
Yeah. Okay. I'll take that.
Yeah,
Skate or die.
Skate or die. Yeah, man.
Skate or die.
Hey, talk about your dad. What's the most important thing he taught you?
He is the most, I mean, it's all about being essentially a good sport. I mean, anything he taught me early on in life, it's like, he really is. It's like, this guy is just, the integrity is off the charts with my father. He really is he's just the most fair person, like, and in a lot of ways. And I've always admired that, because like, no matter how mad I've ever been about losing anything, whether it's early in life as a kid, if it's a baseball game or like not getting a gig with someone, like auditions I've done in the past, it's like, I don't get upset. Of course you're bummed, but it's like, I'm not a sore loser. It's like his in general. And that's his dude. He is the king of just integrity. It's amazing to watch. And everyone loves Frank Sr. He's the guy. He's the coolest. He really is the best. Like, and he knows, I grew up in Vegas, obviously. And it's like everybody I'd see that met my dad was just like, there was never a person that didn't like my dad that wasn't an asshole. You know what I'm saying? It's like
yeah. That's great, man. Well, like I said, you know what? Well, I've said like three times, you're like a likable guy. So obviously, whatever that mojo he had, he gave it. You know,
if you can like
attention
me,
to it.
If you could learn to like me, then you and you know anybody can. If you like me, you'll like my dad. That's just, he is the fucking guy. But then awesome. Mom wise, she seriously, if I've learned anything from her, is that, I mean, over the years, I mean, everyone goes through their ups and downs, but like, she's the most positive person I've ever known in my entire life. You could bring something to her and complain about it, and I've learned to really think about what I'm about to complain about before I talk to her, because if I do, if I have something to say, like, man, this fucking whatever and this and blah blah blah, and I'm annoyed with it, she's like, well, and she just hits you with this answer where it's so like, okay, well, why would that even matter? Why does that matter so much? Like, that's not a problem. She'll just be like, screw it. It doesn't, like, who cares? That doesn't matter. That's not that important to be upset about. And that's like a, you know, if I was to pretty much put all the ways she's told me to chill out in one way, that's it. Like, she's like, dude, just no, you're fine. There's no reason to be upset. It'd be positive. It's okay. It'll be all right. And you could see in her life, her success. I mean, so she produces, five different burlesque shows in Vegas now. She stopped dancing.
Five.
She has one that just won Best of Las Vegas. It's at the Flamingo. It's called X Burlesque. It's the burlesque show in town. She doesn't dance anymore, but she's been producing for like 15 years now. And so just to prove, like, I mean, she really puts her money where her mouth is. Like, she is the most positive person and a very successful positive person. It's like she just really showed me, like, I mean, anybody that meets her is like, oh man, Angela, she is a ray of sunshine. You can't bring her down. You'll never bring her down. Like, there's nothing anybody could say, because she knows within herself. It's like, that means nothing to me. I'm positive. That's
great, real, man.
So yeah, those two people, man, specifically, I mean, just incredible forces in my life. And, you know, my sister too. They're all, I mean, just all great senses of humor and just creative, very positive.
She in town? Is she in town also?
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
She works for the show as well. She's like,
That's great.
She's like right below mom. She's like the, you know, anything that happens, she knows. She's like the wrangler of all issues. It's amazing.
That's great. So when you're in town, you see your family, you're pretty close. You see them all the time.
Oh yeah. No, we're super close.
Oh, that's great.
My phone is mostly group texts of family and that's pretty much it. It's awesome.
That's great, man. That's really good to hear.
Yeah.
I had a question, single in a relationship, but you mentioned a couple of times your girlfriend. How'd you guys meet?
Yeah. Through mutual friends, pretty much. And in Vegas, you know everybody. I mean, it's like the smallest town ever. It's ridiculous. No, smallest big city, I guess, if you want to call it. It's not even a big city, but it's a very – it's a destination. So, and everybody knows each other here. It's ridiculous. But I saw her – saw a photo of her, of course, you know, fucking Instagram, right? It's like who the hell is that? It's like, I don't even know who that is. And she knew a friend of mine, and then, you know, essentially we were introduced. But – I ended up seeing her one time, and I was just kind of like, oh, it's that fucking girl. No way. And I just essentially inquired through people around her, like, so what's her deal, man? You know? So fast forward, we had coffee, and then, you know, we ended up just like, it was just easy. It's just so immediate. Like, damn, she's the shit. Like, she really is amazing.
Good for you, man.
Awesome. It sounds so, I'm not trying to be cliche, but she really, no, she's
it
a,
sounds nice. Sounds cool.
She is a model. That's what awesome. She does. And here's the thing. Like, when I say that, I only say it because she is a professional. She really is. That's her gig. It's not like, oh, you know, I'm a model, but I do this on the side. Like, literally, that's her deal. And it's incredible how hard she works at it and how naturally amazing she is. It's just, it's ridiculous. Like,
that's
people
awesome.
Can't believe. Yeah, it's just something to mention because, you know, when you go, yeah, I would date a model, you sound like an asshole, first of all. But, like, just say, I have to preface it with she is legit in every way. She's the best. So
that's cool, man. No, it sounds very cool. It doesn't sound anything.
Yeah.
It sounds good. You've been all over the world, man. What's your favorite place you've traveled?
So I have I've been to London a million times at this point, but I always – it's one of those places I just feel like I need to move to at some point in my life.
Really?
Just live in London. Yeah, I mean, for many reasons, I just feel really comfortable out there. I love it there. And as far as other – that's just the place I moved to. But then, like, as far as places I love to death, it was I went to Beirut one time.
Wow.
And I had the best meal of my entire life because I'm Greek, but
yeah, it's Mediterranean, Middle Eastern,
similar food. Yeah. my God. So then, I love Scandinavia in general. I mean, I can hang out in any of those killer cities. Like, Stockholm's the shit. I love Copenhagen. It's kind of hard to pick one, but I do, if I had to choose, man, that's tough. How about you? Where's your favorite? And then I'll kind of, we'll go from there.
Well, it's funny. My wife's from the UK and I've been to London, and the problem is I'm from New York City. So I can't, right. I'd rather be in New York than London. I haven't been anywhere near as many places as you have. So I'm not like, I guess the place that I've, you know, I liked, I don't know. I got married in Hawaii. That was pretty chilled out, and I'd like to go there, but I don't know.
Vancouver, Canada is the shit.
I love it. I heard it's really, I've never been there. Out west, it's gorgeous, right?
I love it.
You know what I thought was nice? We did a family trip one time, and we stayed in Idaho with a buddy of mine, and then we went up to, we drove up to Seattle. I'd never been to the Pacific Northwest. That was breathtaking, man.
Oh, dude, it is so beautiful up there, man. It is next level, natural beauty. You know what I mean?
Ridiculous. Well, especially here in Florida where everything is flat. It was just like I'd never seen – that was just breathtaking. Like I said, it was, you know, pretty amazing. And, you know, I like Colorado. It was cool. I haven't been enough places to make a judgment.
Yeah, no, and it's kind of hard because I feel like I really do love all these places a lot. Like, I mean, Eastern Europe's the shit too. I love Poland.
I've heard that from so many people. Oh, dude, it's just beautiful. Awesome. There.
And even like, you know, I've been to Bucharest. Is cool. It's a little bit more intense, I feel like, but – we went to India not long ago, and that was out of control. Amazing.
What was that like? What was out of control about it?
It was a whole experience that a lot of people, I mean, you have to prepare like mentally, like, wow, this really is culture shock, like totally different. And everyone's happy no matter what. Like, I feel like, you know.
And that's a dirt, and that's like some abject poverty there in many places.
Oh, that's what I was just going to say. The people that are not in, I mean, good fortune, I guess. Like, they're still the happiest. Doesn't matter. Like, they're still finding Christmas lights and that's putting them awesome. Up. Well, Diwali lights, sorry. So anyway, it's like, it's just a great attitude all around, and the food was fucking incredible. And, dude, Moscow was awesome. But what's funny is that what I've learned from traveling so much is that people need to go experience these places because they're never as bad as America or like our perspective is always just so like, oh, it's fucking crazy in Russia. And it's like, well, look, if you're fucking around, if you're an idiot in Russia, yeah, it's gonna get pretty crazy, dude. Like, don't be stupid about it. But like, everything's safe for the most part. I mean, there's certain places that, you know, I guess there's turmoil, obviously, but like, dude, for the most part, everything's cool. But
go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, I just forgot it.
It was my fault.
No, it wasn't you. No, I was thinking because Moscow, and it reminded me of somewhere else to say, but it'll come back to me. No worries. Go ahead.
No, I forgot. Americans, though, we don't travel anywhere near as much as, like, you know, Europeans, for example. I mean, because the state is so big, the states are so big, and you can, you know, you fly from Florida to Seattle and everything's the same there. You know, I mean, there's slight differences, but we're speaking the same language. The social behavior is exactly the same. Whereas you go from, you know, the Netherlands to Russia, it could be dramatically different.
Dude, I love the Netherlands as a whole. I was going to say, I know what it is. Tokyo, dude. Japan. Holy shit. It's one of my favorite places to be. I love Australia. The best coffee in the world is in Australia. I know it might sound like, if you don't know, it is seriously. Like, I mean, I love coffee in South America. I love coffee in Europe in general. But like, dude, when you go to Melbourne, it's just this culture and appreciation and love of the craft. It's like when they make you a coffee, it'll just, if you don't like coffee, you go there and try it, then you could form your opinion on if you like coffee or not, because that is like the place. And so that's another fun fact about myself, I guess. I have an entire list. I'll just show you and I'll scroll through.
Yeah, yeah. You're a coffee snob?
I am on fire about my coffee. Like,
man,
I really mean,
I am too. And after this, man, let's swap out some notes, because we are coffee snobs. Send it to
you. Yeah, it's crazy because over the years of touring, hopefully, okay, if you could see, hopefully this will focus. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, these are actual places to go. Oh, these aren't just, you know.
So I've been to all of those places across the entire world, and it just goes to ongoing lists, and I don't really send it to people, but anytime I get a coffee recommendation.
Oh, those are actually coffee places. Hey, so listen, we'll be selling Frank Sidoris's coffee list for $99.99, and when you order now, we'll give you the extra continent list of.
Oh, my God, it's so funny because it was always just a personal list, but everyone's like, you got to do something with it because I'm not trying to do like a coffee blog or do some kind of thing with it, but a lot of people love coffee and I really love it, so I always just write down places I've been to and like hadn't had personal experiences with for the most part, and like say I'm in Dublin, I tell you to go to this place.
Oh shit.
I always send my friends little screenshots of like whatever city they're going to. So, and if you had a place that you'd been to in Dublin, you're like, dude, but you need to try this. I'll write it down. And next time I'm there, I go and I'll totally, you know, I'll let you know how it goes. I'll give you a,
you're my guy now. And the next time I'm going out of the area,
any state too, for the most part. I mean, I swear to you, I've been, even if it's just like little towns, like sometimes you play festivals in the States or even over in Europe and it's like, you're in the middle of nowhere. You know, but like there's a little coffee shop with some dude with a mustache who really wants to make you a serious cup. It's like, it's always cool, man. I write it all down.
I'll tell you something really funny. Literally today in the gym, I was working out, I was listening to a podcast, and a guy was talking about how great the coffee was in Australia because they have a special kind of chocolate that they fuse in with the coffee or something like that. Now, maybe it wasn't a regular coffee. Maybe it was he said it was called red gold or yellow gold chocolate, and he wound up importing it here. And maybe it wasn't a regular coffee. Maybe it was like a cappuccino kind of thing. I don't know, but I literally was in the gym today listening to this.
Wow.
But he said Australian coffee was amazing, so.
It really is. Yeah, I've never heard of that, but the Australian coffee as a whole, dude, I mean, anywhere, any hotel lobby for the most part. I mean, it seems ridiculous, but they're, I feel like it's almost ingrained in them when they're young. It's like just to make coffee nice. And then like when you come to the States and I've talked to people, I'm like, where are you from? They're like, oh, I'm from Adelaide, or I'm from Perth, or anywhere. I'm from Brisbane. I'm like, so you like coffee? And they're like, oh, of course. Like, you know, it's not even just a niche thing. It's like it's just coffee is their jam.
That's their thing. Yeah. Yeah.
So it seems, you know, I'm not going to say, I can't guarantee it, but in my experience, that's what it seems like. And I respect it because coffee is very important to
day. Yeah, I love coffee. Dude, do you have any places in Tampa? You could probably know better places here than I do.
Tampa? I don't even know. Hold on, because I've only
How
been
funny
there,
would like, that be?
I wonder, I've only been there like twice, I think. And hold on, I might not actually, after all this hype, I might not even have a fucking Tampa.
Well, Tampa's not like a big mecca for coffee. I mean, I don't even know.
Damn, I typed in Tamp, and what I got was the name of a place, but it's not in Tampa.
No worries, man. I'll see if I can fill you into your list.
Dude, that's the thing. That's what's so fun about it is that if you go, hey, I actually have a place, it's called whatever, and then I write it down and I recommend it anytime someone goes to Tampa. So it's kind of a fun thing because any friends or family that are wherever in the world, I'm like, you need to go here and get the fucking pastry and the whatever. And then they're that was good.
That's awesome. That's very cool, actually.
One day I'll publish it somehow, but I don't want to give it away for free. I give it to people I really care about. I'm like, here, just take this. Don't show anyone. Because it's like, I want to share it personally, but I don't want it to just be kind of, I don't know, I put a lot of work in getting it, I guess. So,
Frank, these are jealously guarded secrets that not just anybody could have.
Yeah. Jealously, I love it. Exactly.
That's what happens when you write ad copy for 18 years.
Right, totally. My fucking coffee list.
Yeah, man. Hey, is there a favorite and a least favorite part of what you do?
Let's see. Well, I mean, the fact that you do get to travel as a guitar player. Like, I mean, I'm fortunate enough that is the fact that, I mean, that's how my band works. It's like Slash the name. It's like he's taken us all over the world, and it's just amazing. So. I mean, that is such a positive because I feel like that just makes you, it just rounds you out as a human being. I feel like you really do get to experience other cities, and that, I mean, it's almost impossible to just be ignorant. I mean, have those kind of like silly opinions when you've been to these places. It's like, you know, and then you can experience it and kind of form an actual opinion. But the downside, I mean, I guess this isn't in all seriousness, but I guess when you get fucking sick on the road, that is the worst thing in the world.
Oh, yeah. That's got to be hard.
But no, that's not really an answer. But more so like Because I have animals and stuff at home, and I love to tour, but, like, you know, being your home life, I think I'm fortunate enough to have a woman in my life that actually is understanding and can, you know, really sympathize with the situation, understand this is what I love to do. This is my life. This is what I'm doing for a living. I need to do this. And, you know, she could come out and tour on tour and we can hang out and whatnot. But, like, other than that, not being able to be home sometimes is – that's probably the only real – actual downside, but you know, you do get some off time. Slash loves to just, I mean, if he could, he would play every single day of his life for 4 hours a day live. Like, he, it's like he has days off because he has to. It's like, it's not his choice. So anytime we tour, it's always like a month or more, a little bit, and a little bit in between downtime. So when it's album cycle time, I am gone. Like, it's, I am on tour and I'm home for like 3 weeks out of the year sometimes. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Two days at a time. It's just, you know, that's not a complaint really. It's just kind of like, it's just what it is. I guess if you had to choose a downside.
Yeah. I don't see you. No, it's tough lifestyle. Yeah. I don't see it as a complaint. I mean, someone's going to sit and say, you know, it's easy being a gone 49 weeks a year. I don't think that's like really reality. Right. I think it is a hardship, and it's something that you're okay with because you love what you do. But yeah, I could understand that 100%.
Totally.
And that's what 99% of the musicians who travel, that's the answer they give me, the traveling. Or else they'll say, I'd say
queuing up at airports and waiting. That fucking sucks. I was just
about to say, they like getting to fucking Moscow. They like when they land in Moscow, but the time between A and B is fucking murder. That's exactly what people have said.
100%, dude. That's just all. That is totally the case every time.
Toughest decision you ever had to make, or hardest thing you ever had to do?
It's interesting. Well, I mean, personal life wise,
I can't really think of any.
Guitar wise, I mean, I don't even know if I could go down that road. But personally, that's usually all of those answers defer to animal related stuff. As far as like, you know,
putting down an animal. it's devastating. Oh, it's
worse. Yeah, but I'm trying to think. Like, other than that, I mean, lately things have been pretty solid, but on that question, it'd probably have to be a couple years ago putting down a dog, I guess. It was, dog you've had for your whole life kind of thing.
Oh, it's terrible.
That's the hard, yeah, you know the deal.
We had to put, in 6 months, we lost a dog and a cat, man. It was like, and I walked in there with that cat, and she was a rescue, and I swear to God, I came out, I was bawling.
Oh, dude, they even say you really, I mean, this is just an aside, you really shouldn't go in with your animal when you do that, like, for a lot of reasons. I mean, there was a whole explanation where it's like, it's just not good for you as a human. It's just not good. Like, even though of course you want to be there for your animal, I was just like, I get it. But I personally, it was my Shar Pei years ago. Yeah. I could not fucking even handle it. It's just the craziest thing, man.
No, it's horrible. It's my, we had to put our other dog down. This was like 10 years ago. And my two sons wanted to come in with me. My daughter and my wife stayed out. But this last time was tough. The cat was 17, man. And she was just a fucking warrior. She was homeless.
That's incredible. Dude, cats, that's a good year.
Yes. And she was like homeless. My daughter found her. She weighed 7 pounds. And she had no claws. I don't know how she even survived and what kind of asshole rips her claws out. But yeah, I was just like bawling, and they were like, you know, because I'm not like a big guy, but I'm sort of like, you know, muscular, and people were like, I was like a fucking whimpering baby, man. And I was
there's nothing you could do about it, man. That's just what it is. Like, that's, you know, you care and you love something, especially, I mean, animals are just innocent. So,
And
when you know the decision has to be made, it's just,
oh, it's gut wrenching.
Fucking worse, dude. I get it, man. I'm so with you on that.
Best advice you've ever been given?
Let's see here.
And who gave it to you, if you remember?
It's funny because I can kind of go into this relationship wise. It's one of my favorite pieces. It was from this guy's name's Freeman, and he's been with his wife forever. I mean, I don't even know how many years. It's insanely long. So he was explaining to me, he goes, hey, can I give you some advice? This was years ago when I was younger. He's just like, Couple things. Number one, don't be jealous. You shouldn't, don't be jealous in general, but there should, the person you're dating should not put you in a position usually to be jealous too. So it was kind of like that. I was like, all right, I'll take that. And then he said, number two, take separate vacations. I was like, what? And then he goes, being away from each other is one of the most important things. It's like not playing the guitar. Like this totally flies. It's like the same boat. Like Alex Lifeson actually said this. It's like some of the best things I could ever do as a guitar player was not play. He goes, play your ass off. Take 2 weeks off if you have to. It's like, or take a couple days. It's like, you're going to, you know, you'll approach it differently. You'll look at the guitar. Like when you sit down, you're not going to play the same shit again. I mean, you know what I mean? Like
yeah, I do. Fresh eyes. It's a big help.
That's it. So then, and then, you know, relationship wise, it definitely falls in the same boat. It's like you, he says, take separate vacations. Like, you know, say I went to LA for a day or something. It's like, you get to miss each other. You need to miss the person you're with. You need to miss the guitar.
Yeah.
It's nice to take a break in general. So
I get that.
I guess that kind of, you know, I looped it in there with a guitar somehow.
No, that's no, but separate vacation, man, I wouldn't go away for 2 weeks and I kind of really wouldn't want my wife going. I'd like a day or two here or there. I could.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
A couple of days.
It's important that they have, you know, that you have separate lives, I think is.
Like, absolutely. Yeah. And as a guitar player, touring guitar player, I was like, that's a, you know, that was a big deal. Like, you know, you get to miss each other. Like that's awesome.
Yeah.
So everything's cool. I think that helps with 5 years of, you know, and I'm talking to a guy who's been with someone for 25 years. So
yeah.
You could give me much more advice on that, but
I don't know if I could. Jeez, I don't know. We're both type A's and I don't, I'm trying to think. I've learned so much as I'm just trying to think if I could say one thing. My wife has helped me be a much better person, and a lot of, I mean, I had to do the changing, but a lot of it was motivated by her. Like, I wanted to be better because I felt she deserved a better Craig, and so. But I think, as far as relationship goes, man, somebody told me this one time. They said, you know, you got to work your relationship. It's like a business. If you stop working your business dies. And I always kept that in mind. And like, I have to honestly say, now we got the formula down pat. Whereas, you know, if we have an argument, the other person wants, somebody steps in and says, hey, listen.
I like that. That's cool. Yeah. It's like, you could kind of, okay.
You know, hey, listen, what's so important about being right?
Great point.
It's just fucking not important. So none of us give a shit now. What we care about, and it took a long time to get there. What we care about is like, man, this is, we know we're on each other's team. Let's just fucking get, you know, talk about it. You know, and it's easy for us both to say, I'm sorry now. It's not, you know, we're both not preoccupied about being right.
That's cool. Yeah.
And it's made, that was a big thing for us. And, you know, of course, you know, silly things everybody else does, good communication and all that kind of shit. So
totally,
you know, but
no doubt about it.
Yeah. I don't know if having one long relationship, I don't know if that's qualified. I was married before that didn't work. So maybe that's qualifies me to have a bad one and a good one. I don't know.
No, I understand. Yeah. I mean, you go to school off of all that and then here you are. And now 25 years later, it's like,
yeah,
you're doing a great job. Well, so that's cool.
Well, thanks. I got an easy partner to do it with. So yeah. Last question, man. And I cannot thank you enough. I mean, this has been a real pleasure talking to you, man. Honestly.
Back at you. No, 100%.
You know, I like, you know, somehow
you make it easy.
Stay in contact. Oh man, you make it easy. I'm the same dude every episode. last question, and this is a changing question. What's your definition of happiness today? Obviously that could change tomorrow, next week. And
I think over time, like when you work maybe like a 9-to-5 or something, it's something that you don't want. I mean, I'm not discrediting 9-to-5, but I'm saying something that you don't want to do. It's like I think now that all I did was fantasize back then, like when I was working and just retail and shit, and it's like now doing this, it's like a happiness for me is knowing 1000% that I'm working towards, like I am writing or I'm something awesome's going down. Like I'm literally working towards being a better guitar player. Happiness for me is if I'm sitting here and I'm like, man, oh, I have a much better understanding of the Mixolydian scale. Man, this is how I feel. Like, that makes me feel so good. That's happiness, dude. Like, for me personally, knowing that I'm on the right, like, feeling like I'm on the right track as a guitar player and as a person. And, you know, I'd say that's pretty much, I'd say that's the way I could sum that up. That's where I'm coming from. Cause lately anytime I leave rehearsals or something like that, I feel whole. I just feel good. Like, man, that's progress. And I guess you could sum it up in, like, knowing that I'm making progress at all, knowing that I am progressing in something that I truly care about, whether it is, you know, playing a guitar or, you know, my relationships, my friendships, everything. I just, that makes me feel good.
And you know what? Your mom's going to be happy when she hears that, because it's very positive.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
She will, man.
Seriously, could thank them both for,
she'll be real happy.
They really both are just that, you know, what I mentioned. They're just fucking just stand up people and very positive, both of them. It's awesome.
Awesome, man.
I love positive people. Like, hey, dude, this fucking guy cut me off or whatever, any stupid example. And they're just like, hey, it doesn't matter. And and that certainty of them telling me that doesn't matter makes me just feel so, man, I feel dumb for complaining to you, but I also feel enlightened, and I'm going to approach things differently now, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. Much of shit we all get frustrated with from time to time probably doesn't matter. That's what I've found, you know?
100%, dude.
Listen, I cannot thank you enough for everything. You're just an awesome guy. Let me tell people where they can find you and what to look out for. So Frank's on Instagram. Check him out at Frank Sidoris. It's Frank, if I have to spell that, I can't help you. Sidoris, Sidoris. And he's also on Twitter.
Good job.
And he's also on Twitter at Frank Sidoris. And one thing you might want to talk about, look out for the new Slash and Miles and the Conspirators CD coming out in 2018. Want to mention something about that?
Well, it's all, it's funny because right now everyone's kind of freaking out about it. Like, hey, when's it coming out? What's the plan? And, you know, the long and short of it is that it's been a work in progress for a long time, but I mean, I can't say much, but I mean, it's definitely, I imagine things will be, rocking and rolling pretty soon enough. We have an album to finish. So that's something to know. I mean, there's no definite number here, but we're working on giving everybody what they want. So that's something to know.
Awesome.
whenever possible, that's this, you know, we're working on it.
Awesome. And where do they go? Slash's website to go sign up to check you out and get tickets. And
I actually, it's so funny. Is it Slash Online? I
don't know. Let's figure this out immediately. I'm going to do this right now. See if we could figure it out. Slash Tour. Boom. We don't mess around. SlashOnline.com.
SlashOnline.com. So yeah, I got it. Wow.
You got it. Yeah. And there's a whole tour here, all the GNR stuff. And then I'm assuming that it'll have the other stuff. And just check out Frank, man. He's a great guy, great guitar player. And you're going to hear a lot from him in the next many, many years to come. Hey, awesome. Man, you're great. Thank you so much. I honestly really appreciate it. You're just a real
anytime, we'll be in touch.
Good.
I have many guitars to send you.
Good. Hey, everybody, awesome. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this interview as much as I did, which would be very difficult because I really had a blast doing this. Thanks so much to Frank Sidoris for being incredibly generous with his time. I really appreciate it. I know everybody listening does. And go to everyonelovesguitar.com. Sign up to get notified about future episodes along with some cool stuff for guitar players. Now, be nice. This is important. Go play your guitar and have fun. Until next time, peace and love. I'm out. We hope you enjoyed this show. If you did, subscribe to the Everyone Loves Guitar podcast, and you can do this online at everyonelovesguitar.com or on iTunes. And if you like the show, please leave us a 5-star positive review. The more 5-star reviews we get, the higher our show ranks, and higher rankings mean we get to continue speaking with cool, interesting guests on our show. We'll see you on the next episode, and until then, keep playing your guitar and have fun making music.